The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Medical experts and politicians nationwide are reconsidering masking requirements and COVID restrictions, but some of them are clashing over the best path forward. On the one hand, the number of cases continues to go down, which is great. On the other, 99% of the country still has high transmission rates. So some states are already loosening restrictions, but the CDC is not budging on their recommendations.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. Great to be back here with you. Let's do a quick update on COVID. I will take a look at the latest news and where we are in the fight with it. Is it over? Are there new variants heading our way? What's the latest with vaccines? What is what's coming, and will these mandates and these vaccines and the boosters, will they become a memory, or will we see a fourth booster or some other vaccination coming up in the not too distant future? And should we even be calling these vaccines? Are they really vaccines? I had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day. So we'll talk about that with Dr. Robert Tabali. Also, Dr. Tabali has deep knowledge when it comes to medical history. And I've been looking back at the great pandemic of 1918. And, the 1918 flu didn't end in 1918. So how did they finally get beyond that? What kind of variants did they see? And what can we learn from the greatest world pandemic 100 years ago? And how it reflects on our own day. So if you want to join us, the number for you is always open, and I always love to hear from you. Always good to share the table with you. The number for you is 888-914-9149. Call anytime, and we're going to talk all things COVID. If you've got a question, if you we'll talk everything from ivermectin to to vitamin C, whatever you want. It's completely open. But before I get to that, I just want to I want to thank you first for your generosity. I told you I was going to give you another update, and I was blown away. We have a pretty rough economy, as you know. Inflation numbers are not good. You know, when you go to the grocery stores or when you put gas in your car, how much more it's now costing you. And we have some of the worst numbers in 40 years. And I'm thinking, market volatility is underway. So we're going into a pledge drive, and we're asking you to help support us, to share this vision. And people live within their means. When it comes to radio, so often people just, they're used to it being free, but most people don't pay for radio, although some do pay for, Sirius or XM, and you pay for your cable. But I was curious to see how this would shake out. And during the last pledge drive, the numbers were just incredible. Come Friday, we needed to probably raise, close to $1 million to get the goal. And I'm thinking that would be a miracle, wouldn't it? Our goal was $3 million. As the time I signed off the air, 6 Central, 6 Eastern, 5 Central Time, and of course, what was that Eastern time there? 3 Eastern, or 3 Pacific, I should say. We didn't quite hit goal. We were just short of it, But it was an amazing pledge drive. I couldn't believe that, we got as close as we did. Well, to my surprise, later that day, I got a report from my colleague here at the network. They were still working behind the scenes. They were still crunching numbers. And by 8 p.m. Central time, the new total came in. And on that Friday, we not only crossed the finish line, but we ended up with about $126,000 over. Now, almost 16,000 people donated. Unbelievable. It was a historic pledge drive in terms of generosity, in terms of people that were stepping up to say yes to Relevant Radio. And the generosity is just, it's literally breathtaking. We're going to be here for you now for months to come. We're going to continue in this mission of informing you, educating you, hopefully inspiring you, hopefully helping you with your walk with the Lord. And this is a very unique type of radio platform. There's not a whole lot of it out there, and we are listener supported. So I just want to say thank you to everyone who's done that. I know a lot of people can't, and I get that, really. And we just ask that you pray for us, and we're praying for you. And I'm going to continue to pray in thanksgiving for God's providence and generosity to this ministry. If for some reason you're away last week and you missed your chance, I'll give you the number. Not too late to be part of what's just a great movement, great effort. 877-291-0123. If you tuned in at all last week, you're probably sick of that number. If you missed it, jot it down, okay? 877-291-0123 or online at relevantradio.com. Of course, mobile app's a great way to go, too. But just thank you. Again, you know, my hat off to you. I just couldn't believe it. We hit it out of the park. And I think the country needs Relevant Radio. I mean, look, we've been here for a couple of years with Dr. Tabali too, right? We've been guiding you through COVID. We've been here through elections. We are now going to be here as we look at what's happening in the Ukraine. So much going on in the world and in the church. And to have a moral, to have a Catholic, to have a Judeo-Christian perspective on all that, I think is just, I think it's important. I value it. I give my time, my talent, my treasure, and we're grateful for everyone who else has done the same thing. But let's talk COVID. I'm going to give you the number. Feel free to join us, 888-914-9149. And this is an important issue, too. There were some moral concerns some people had with the vaccines. You had church that said, hey, it's okay. There are concerns about, you know, this being kind of a giant human trial. People say, hey, wait a minute. The church might say it's okay, but I'm concerned about this. So many people are waiting for other vaccinations, another new vaccines along the way. We'll see where they are. And then also, is this even a vaccine? Should we be using that term? Mandates, I think people are tired of. We see what's happening in Canada. We've seen what's happening here in this country. And then we see ever-changing news, right? Pfizer's delayed its request to the FDA to approve the use of its vaccine for kids under the age of 5. That was a surprise to me because those vaccines, each one of them is money. According to NBC News, and it's where I had seen this report earlier today, Pfizer said on Friday that it's going to wait for its data on a three-dose series of vaccines because it believes that three doses may provide a higher level of protection in that age group. So the company said that the data on the third dose, you know, they're expected in early April, so we'll see what shakes out then. But so far, the pause button has been hit. Everywhere you look right now, mandates are dropping, right? People are tired of them. They are done. Even these very liberal blue states, even though the CDC and the White House has not changed their position on mandates and masks, people are still, these blue states are now beginning to drop those mandates. Starting tomorrow, you can actually go into any establishment in Washington, D.C. and not have to show proof of vaccination, unless that establishment still wants it. It's up to the proprietor. But a bunch of other cities and states that are run by Democrats are dropping them. Minneapolis and St. Paul have dropped their vaccine mandates, especially after businesses, you know, at restaurants. They dropped 40%, right? Can you believe this? You're a proprietor, you own a restaurant, and you see a 40% decline in your revenue after these mandates go into effect? And it's not just Minneapolis or St. Paul. It's all over the country. Canadians, they're seeing the same thing as well. A lot is going on. But over the weekend, I had an opportunity to have dinner with a friend on Sunday, and they host a Super Bowl party every year. And this friend of mine is actually a surgeon, and he was raising questions about the terminology that we use. You know, is this truly a vaccine? And I'm going to get his take coming up in a minute. But first, let me welcome to the show Dr. Robert Tabali. He actually said to me at dinner, my friend, he said, hey, he says, next time you have Dr. Tabali on, ask him about this. So I said, well, why don't you call in? So we're gonna have him join us and get some input from him as well. But Dr. Tabali's been kind of our infectious disease doc, guiding us through this pandemic now for 2 years. And it's always good to tap into his expertise. Doctor, welcome back. Good to talk with you again.
Happy Valentine's Day, Drew, and thanks for having me.
Happy Valentine's Day.
It seems like we're entering a real changing point, possibly, hopefully, you know, dare we have hope, you know, that maybe everybody's been naturally infected and or vaccinated, and maybe we'll see a decrease in incidence of COVID in the near future. You know, the Spanish flu of 2018, I think it started in 2017, it didn't end till I believe 2019 or early 2020. And what happened was...
You're talking about Spanish flu 19, right, Doctor? 1918, you're talking about? Or 2018, you're saying?
Yeah.
2018.
Yeah. Oh, did I say 2018? Yeah. It's been a long year, Drew.
That's awesome. You're confusing me. I'll get the Spanish flu. No, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, when I wake up in the morning, I'm so tired. When I wake up in the morning, after working 20-hour days for weeks and weeks now, I have to ask myself, what day of the week is it? Is it
Tuesday? I don't know how you guys do it.
Tuesday? Is it Thursday? I have no idea. But the Spanish flu just kind of mutated itself out of existence. I mean, there wasn't anything that anybody could do to monitor the flu activity. I mean, the science was so, can I say, ancient at that time. No technical equipment, really.
Right.
And all they could do was test with sera, you know, anti-sera and sera from recovered people. But long and short of it, it just kind of stopped.
Well, doctor, I'll tell you. Let's do this. I want to dive a little bit more into the history of the lessons we can learn from the 1908 pandemic. But before we do that, my buddy is calling in right now, and I want to have a conversation with you and with him on this whole concept of vaccinations and where we are and how this differs from a polio vax versus let's say just your flu shot. It's great to have with me Dr. Jay Bosco. He's a gastroenterologist, and Dr. Bob Tabali, of course, our infectious disease doc here as well. Jay, good to have you with me. Welcome. You're on the air with Dr. Tabali. It was fun with you last night. We had a great time. Thanks for your hospitality. And you brought up at the table this conversation about vaccines. And I thought, well, why don't you come on? Why don't you talk to Bob about Dr. Tabali about this, and we'll bring this to the table of everyone who's listening.
Sure. Well, good afternoon, Drew and Dr. Tabali. Thanks for inviting me on for a few minutes that I have with you. But yeah, we're talking, Drew and I, and some of the terminology we're using. We talk about this as a vaccine, but of course we're still susceptible. As an analogy, we talk about we don't talk necessarily about a flu vaccine. We talk about a flu shot. So. I mean, I was just bringing up that issue with how, we just need to be careful with our terminology, particularly with, keeping, credibility within the community and not losing the faith of the commitment of our patients and in the community. So. It's just, the fact that we still are susceptible, though it's moderated, so it does increase our immunization, but it doesn't necessarily, prevent illness. I'm a gastroenterologist. I give patients, hepatitis B vaccines regularly. We anticipate that they're immune from ever getting, hepatitis B for the most part, except for very few exceptions. So just want to, we're discussing that. I just don't know what your take would be on that.
Well, interestingly, hepatitis B vaccine is kind of a good model for understanding what happens with this vaccine. But, when they initially got a vaccine, there was, or whatever you want to call it, the injection, there was the great hope that it would be preventative of getting an infection, that it would keep people from getting infected, and the immunity would be long-lasting. But what we've seen is that the virus has mutated to the point to evade whatever protection the vaccine grants. And the vaccines that are being given now, or whatever you want to call it, the jab or whatever, they were developed against, the ancient or historical strains that first became prominent a couple of years ago. And so what we have now circulating is substantially different than that. However, the vaccines, or whatever you want to call it, I'm going to call it vaccine over and over again.
Let me interject there for one second, because both of you are physicians. I'm curious, why does the CDC, why does the White House, why is everybody using the term vaccine if it's not really a vaccine?
Well, it initially was a vaccine. They expected immunity to be broad, very bold and strong, and long-lasting. But what has happened is that the immunity we've discovered wanes with time, and it's not a durable vaccine. So it kind of in the middle between a vaccine and a treatment. But clearly, the endpoints of surviving severe infection, preventing severe infection, preventing death. I mean, even the vaccine, these shots that were developed you know, a couple of years ago, still do prevent serious illness and death. Now, that being said, they're not perfect, and they need to be updated if they want to continue to have any degree of high efficacy. But, you know, there's a lot of concern about the vaccine escape, and if we use vaccines and we still have circulating virus and the virus is still mutating, then if we have a significant portion of the population vaccinated, we're going to select out for vaccine-resistant mutants. And that's going to become more and more of a problem if we continue to use these kind of outdated last-year model-type vaccines. And when you get a flu shot, it basically gives you a significant amount of immunity for about 6 months, but then it begins to wane. And the elderly may be a little shorter than that. It's not a long-lasting vaccine.
Okay.
Now, the hepatitis
It's the same. Just to interject, I mean, it's even natural, you know, the natural immunity is, you know, wanes as well. You know, again, just using a hepatitis B analogy, you know, if my patients have had exposure to a natural virus, then again, they have long-standing natural immunity. Which is not the case here. You know, we've had, you know, many reports of patients getting, you know, reinfected. So even natural exposure, though, again, you know, and not to, you know, argue any of this. You know, I've been vaccinated myself. I think it's helpful. It's just some of the terminology I think can be misleading, that patients feel that, you know, if they get this vaccination, that it's more like getting the hepatitis B vaccine or the polio or other vaccines, rather than as you say, sort of a boost to the immune system, more like we think about an annual flu shot, which is, it's just to kind of pick out what the likely variant's going to be for this coming year and with the flu shot, and then, you know, we go from there, and sometimes we get it and sometimes we don't, you know. And,
Now, the hepatitis B vaccine, anybody who's applying to nursing school or medical school or whatever will understand this. If they were immunized 5 years before and they go in and they had positive titers at that time denoting protection from the hepatitis B vaccine, but if they go in now 5 years later and they get a blood draw to see if they've got hepatitis B antibodies, they may be non-detectable because unless they're exposed to it, it kind of quiets down as far as the ability, the active antibody production for the hepatitis B virus. But there's a very significant amnestic or memory response if someone got exposed to a needle stick injury with hepatitis B, and they, in most situations, remain protected. But we commonly have to give a booster vaccine for hepatitis B, which does really nothing for long-standing immunity. It'll boost the antibody up so that you pass the test for being able to be a nurse or a doctor, but it goes away in about 3 or 4 months. It's a quick response and quick evaporation. But, you know, we used to give immune globulin for hepatitis A to people that were traveling, and we call that a passive immunization, and we knew that that only lasted for 3 or 4 months at the most. But, you know, I don't so much have a problem with them using the word vaccination. Maybe for some people, they consider it to be a vaccine, you know, a concrete, hard cast protection, you know, like a wall around you that protects you from infection. Well, that's not these things. But they really, really, honestly do provide a significant amount of protection against serious illness and death. And that was demonstrated to me in spades this past month, between the people that were unvaccinated that came to the hospital and were admitted and the people that were vaccinated. You know,
that's fascinating.
Dr.
Brosco, I know you have a busy day today, too, so I want to give you an opportunity for final thoughts here, too. I appreciate you calling in and giving us your time.
Well, I appreciate just the dialogue and Dr. Dabali and all the information. I've kind of followed often your presentations and appearances on the show. So I think you're giving some very good information. You know, one of the things that we've talked about is just the fact that I've kind of used the analogy that that, you know, if just the broad susceptibility that we all have to this virus, you know, which is one of the major issues. You know, this started off with zero natural immunity in the population, and so I've often used the analogy that if we all got a flat tire at the same time, it'd be an international disaster. You know, so part of it isn't necessarily how severe, you know, if you look at the statistics, but it's just that we're all getting it at once. We don't have any, you know, until we get some natural immunity to, or and or the vaccine up and running, we were just in a very susceptible position. So I think we're in a much different place now between vaccinations and, you know, natural immunity and hopefully some, you know, less virulent strains as there's been mutations. We'll be in a better place going forward.
Well, hey, doctor, thank you. Thanks for calling. Thanks for joining the conversation.
Yeah, thanks.
The platform's always open. Yeah. I know you're busy, so I don't want to take too much of your time. Grateful for having you here.
All right, thanks so much. Yep.
That's Dr. Jay Bosco.
And
as I was sharing Dr. Dabali last night, this whole issue came up. And I think to your point there then, I mean, it really comes down to terminology in a lot of respects, doesn't it? I think of the polio vaccination or your chicken pox. You're not going to get you're not going to get polio after you've been vaccinated, whereas with COVID you will. But I guess it's just nomenclature then. That's what this comes down to in the end.
It's kind of semantics to a degree. Yeah. I mean, this injection provides you some degree of immunity. You know, a year and a half ago, it was much more directed and targeted towards what was happening than it is today. But it does provide some degree of protection, significant amount of protection against serious illness and death, you know. But
Well, let's do this. I'm going to take I'm sorry, Doctor, go right ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's not perfect. And the problem, one of the major problems with this is everybody's interested in it. Everybody reads every word that comes out about it almost every day that comes out.
Yeah.
Now we're all sick and tired of it. And, you know, part of our frustration is causing us to throw darts at the terminology.
Yeah, right.
And so are we ever going to have a better vaccine? Are we going to have a perfect vaccine for this stuff? Honest to God, I'm surprised we have a vaccine at all. I didn't think that they were going to be able to develop one because the vaccines they tried to develop for SARS, they caused such intense augmented immune reactions. You know, they vaccinate the mice that were hybridized. They had human lungs, basically.
Right.
They vaccinate them. They get immunity, the immeasurable antibodies that neutralized the virus. Then they squirt the virus down into the lungs, you know, the human lung tissue in the mice. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a topic for another story sometime. But and then the mice would have a super acute reaction to it and die because their immune system destroyed their lungs over, you know, so quickly. So here I am thinking we're never going to see a vaccine for this because historically all the vaccines that they tried for MERS and SARS mm-hmm. and similar stuff, they caused too intense an immune reaction and caused people, you know, caused the laboratory subjects to die when they were exposed to subsequent infections.
Wow.
And so, you know, I'm okay to some degree with people getting an asymptomatic case or a very low case of an infection after one of these injections or vaccines or whatever. You know, I think I would like us to have a vaccine like Novavax, you know, coming out. J&J just stopped making their vaccine. I don't know if you heard about that.
No, I didn't, but I'll tell you, hold the thought. I want to pick it up on the other side. I had to take a short pause. I want to hear about J&J, why they stopped making their vaccines. Where's Novavax and all these other vaccinations? We'll take some phone calls as well. You might have heard that Prince Charles and his wife Camilla tested positive for COVID-19. They had been vaccinated with two shots and boosted. So a lot going on. Giving you the latest on COVID-19, the coronavirus, and where we are. Are we coming to the end of it? Let's hope so. Our conversation continues. Feel free to join us. We'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The truth.
Thanks, Drew. Always a quest for the truth.
Now.
And it just reinforced why I love Relevant Radio, because you guys got the truth.
The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. It's good to be here with you today, giving you the latest. Always new developments. They seem like they come in almost on a daily basis, but at least once a week I try to bring you up to speed on all that is unfolding with this pandemic, with COVID-19. I learn a lot every week from experts like Dr. Robert Tobolli, who joins us today, a very gifted infectious disease doctor in the state of Illinois. You can check him out at germbusters.com. And, Doctor, I want to go to the phones. Before we do, though, when we left off, you just mentioned that Johnson & Johnson is no longer be producing their vaccination. Why is that? Is it because of the efficacy or the side effects, or why did they abandon something that is somewhat lucrative for that company?
My understanding is they stopped producing in the United States. I don't know about factories overseas. The banter is that they've got another vaccine in development that they're very encouraged about.
Oh, wow.
That is different than this vaccine. So, but that's my understanding. And then Pfizer pulled their application for the 6 month to 5 years of age. That was supposed to be debated, I think, tomorrow by the FDA, but they postponed that meeting. They don't have the They do not have the Novavax on the FDA site. I was checking that this morning to see if they had a plan for discussing the Novavax vaccine. For those of you that don't know about the Novavax, it's an older, traditional, more traditional type of vaccination, very similar to the current hepatitis B vaccine, very high safety profile, low side effects, and very efficacious. And so I've been hoping that that would be released. And then a lot of the people that are hesitant about getting one of the messenger RNA vaccines for many reasons, you know, if they wanted to get vaccinated, they would have a different option for that.
Yeah.
And anybody that has a an immune-compromised person in their family, lymphoma, leukemia, transplant patient, solid or liquid organ transplant, multiple myeloma, and so on, there's this product called Evusheld that was just released a few weeks ago. It's a long-acting antibody that's given in shots under the skin. It's a passive immunization. It's ethically raised. It's raised from human subjects, not fetal tissue or anything like that, or mice that are hybridized. But it's raised from human source antibodies, and it's effective for about 6 months. And it has to be given if you have not had COVID recently, or if you have not been vaccinated recently. Because if you've had COVID or been vaccinated recently, you can have heart inflammation or a heart attack. Honest to God. But the Evusheld is very, very powerful protection for people who normally can't raise antibodies if they're exposed to a vaccine. So what's happened, like in the patients with solid organ transplants on immunosuppressives, they get the Pfizer, Moderna, whatever, and they don't develop antibodies despite getting the vaccine. That's why they're getting, you know, they originally were on three-shot series, and now they're on a four-shot series. But the Evusheld gives passive immunization for a period of 6 months and protects those people. So if you have a family member that may be planning on having a bone marrow transplant or something like that, this is something you'd want to investigate ahead of time. A lot of the doctors don't know about it, sorry to say. But Evusheld, E-V-U-S-H-E-L-D, word to the wise is sufficient.
All right. Doctor, before I go to the phones, just a quick follow. We got a call offline, off air, regarding the vaccine and microclots. Maggie, why don't you open your microphone, since you and Nick, who are screening the phones today, had personal connection with that? Because this is something that has a lot of concern for people, these blood clots, supposedly, microclotting as well. What did the caller ask, Maggie?
Sure. So they were saying that there seems to be a pattern that happens with those who do get vaccinated end up having issues with microclots or microclotting, and the same happens for people who may not have been vaccinated but got COVID and they're having blood clotting issues. So they were asking, you know, what's the deal with these clotting factors in either case?
Well, that's a common problem that we deal with, like with every patient that's hospitalized for COVID. And that's why I keep asking people to take aspirin for 60 days after they get a vaccination and for 90 days after they might have natural COVID. When people are admitted to a hospital and they're requiring oxygen or ICU care, if people survive to discharge and they're discharged, fully a third of those or 30% of those people will have some clotting event after they're discharged within like 60 days after their discharge. So they might have a clot in their leg. It may break off and go to their lung, pulmonary embolism, life-threatening. There are people that get hepatic vein thrombosis and other serious clots. The clots that were so problematic with the AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson vaccine, the sinus cavernous sinus thrombosis in the brain, that can happen from natural COVID. The problem is that spike protein, for some people, is very, very thrombogenic. It loves to create clots. And so when patients get admitted through the emergency department, I'm always ordering something called a D-dimer, which is to look for some of the byproducts of a clot forming and breaking down. And if the D-dimer is above a certain level or high, we put patients on full anticoagulation. Yeah. Sometimes the clotting actually breaks through the anticoagulation. But there's a fairly significant percentage of people that present with COVID to the, like, an emergency department that are having active pulmonary emboli at the same time. And sometimes we don't see any clots in the legs. They may be the clotting may be occurring in other areas of the body and traveling the lung. And then one of the problems with the lungs, where people end up needing to be on ventilators and so on, can be microvascular clotting in the blood supply to and from the tiny air sacs in the lungs. So if the clotting is a terrible issue with this, and this is one of the most dangerous aspects.
Is there a test somebody can get? I mean, a lot of people have been vaccinated. They might say, hey, do I have microclotting? They may not know, and they might have this. Is there a way to determine whether they're dealing with that issue?
Well, this test, about the only one we have is this D-dimer blood test.
Right.
And it's kind of nonspecific. I mean, pregnant women have elevated D-dimers because of the placenta interface. And, there's a lot of other things that can cause a D-dimer to be elevated.
We'll just take aspirin then. We'll follow your advice. I'm going to move along, Doc, because we have a lot of calls who are waiting to speak with you. And I know how quickly this last 20 or 30 minutes will go. Let's go to Kelly in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. She's got a question for you. Kelly, good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Drew. In the spring, I had the COVID vaccine and the first shot and second shot, and a month later, I developed an autoimmune disease called birdshot. It's uveitis of the eyes, and I'm wondering if you're seeing connections. I mean, do you think this could be from the COVID vaccine?
Good question.
So I believe you have Bichette's or Bichette's. B-E-C-H-E-T-S. It can cause uveitis and hypopyon of the eye and then other things. I'm not aware of an association. There's, I take care of a lot of Lyme patients, and after they have natural infection or vaccination, they oftentimes have a worsening of their symptoms. I've had a number of patients that have been tested negative, negative, negative for Lyme disease, and then they get their vaccine series. They have, worsening of their symptoms, whatever, they get another Lyme test, and they're strikingly positive. We just don't have that information. There's some people who are hypothesizing that after you get a vaccination, part of your immune system actually decreases in function. And I do see a lot of people after having natural COVID that can have a reactivation of certain viruses that are DNA viruses, and they basically become part of you after you have an infection, such as herpes, the shingles virus, cytomegalovirus, or CMV, or Epstein-Barr virus, or EBV. There's a lot of people that have reactivation of these, and they can have hepatitis, fatigue, other symptoms. And this is one of the things I investigate when I look at patients with, quote, long COVID symptoms. And there's another one, HHV6, which causes an infection in children. That's very, very common. Virtually everyone has had it that has passed through childhood. But I'm sorry, I can't tell you that there's a link. Right. There very well may be.
Yeah, Kelly, thank you for your call. I am grateful for it. I'll move along just because we're short on time here. Kathy in Southern California. You're on with Dr. Tabali. Thanks for your patience.
Hi there. Thank you. I'm one of the few lucky ones who hasn't either had the shots or been, you know, had COVID. But so many of my friends have now gotten it, mostly the Omicron. And so they're a bit cavalier about taking any precautions at all and thinking that they are protected and sort of saying, hey, I don't have to worry, I've already had it. I'm wondering how concerned I should be about that.
All right.
I'm sorry, phone was breaking up a little bit. You've had infection in the past or you
haven't? I have not. I have not had the infection. I've not had the shots. And lots of my friends have had either the infection with or without the shots.
Right. Okay. Well, you know what happens a lot with people, if they get infected, I mean, the first infection that somebody gets is the worst one. And there's a lot of people who, like Maggie, the sound producer here, and myself, who've been infected and then get reinfected about a year later with exposure. And, you know, the first infection is most severe. Subsequent infections seem to be far less severe. So I recommend everyone, if you've never had the infection and you don't want to get vaccinated, to please take vitamin D daily, at least 4,000 units a day. Fauci takes 6, I take 4, and take a zinc tablet a day. There was a recent study that came out of Israel where it appears that vitamin D levels is the most sensitive indicator of how someone will do with COVID. This study was just published like 2 weeks ago, and what they found was people with very low vitamin D levels tended to have a more severe case of COVID. People with normal or elevated vitamin D levels actually had a far less severity in their COVID infection or the immunological reaction that follows the natural infection. And I think that maybe when we look back on this, that vitamin D levels may be the most sensitive, other than age and other, you know, heart disease and lung disease comorbidities. Yeah. The vitamin D levels may be the most sensitive, or may be the reason why people get so sick. And a lot of people of dark skin color, blacks and Hispanics, they tend to have very low vitamin D levels because of the pigment of their skin.
Wow. All right. Hey, thank you very much for your call, Kathy. Glenn in Chicago, you're on with Dr. Tabali. Good afternoon.
Dr. Tabali, I have a question. I have a niece who has fibromyalgia, and she has basically locked herself in her house because she's afraid of touching COVID, and she will not get a COVID-19 vaccine because she's had a bad experience even with the flu vaccine. I'm wondering what you might recommend for someone who has fibromyalgia as far as getting vaccinated.
Well, if she has another underlying immune issue, if she was open to getting this Evusheld that I was talking about, that might help protect her. But there's certain criteria that she have to meet in order to be eligible to get that passive antibody that I was talking about, the Evusheld. You know, again, you know, for her, all I can say is, you know, the vitamin D and the zinc. Some people will prescribe ivermectin. I can't do that. You know, if you're kind of a high-profile guy and you do stuff like that, then they want to take your license away. So I don't understand why, but that's where things are. So there's not a lot of other preventative means. Some people might say, you know, Quercetin plus zinc and things like that. I've seen a couple of people go into renal failure from Quercetin, so I'm not really that hot on the Quercetin, which is an over-the-counter natural thing. And some people talk about N-acetylcysteine. I haven't really seen data there that I would trust on that, but a lot of people take it. You know, I believe in choice, but unfortunately with your, you know, your family member with a fibromyalgia, there are reports of people getting vaccination and having their fibromyalgia become much more severe.
Wow.
So I could understand her not wanting that. That's another. I mean, the Novavax is a different kind of vaccination with a far different side effect profile. And one of my concerns is they gave Moderna full approval on January 31st, the same day that Novavax was applying for their emergency use authorization. But, you know, the way the law is written, if there are other treatments in a disease space, like there are these other two vaccinations, Pfizer and Moderna, that now have full approval, that there is no need, there's no cause for emergency use authorization. I certainly hope that they do honestly look at the Novavax, because this would change the landscape on the vaccine front.
All right, Doc, I got to hold it right there. I'm going to take a short pause. I'm going to come right back. As I say, time's the enemy. I wish I had even more time. Thank you for your patience. I know a lot of people are waiting to get through to talk with you. If you want to get in, you can always try 888-914-9149. If you get a busy signal, maybe send a tweet to Maggie at Drew Mariani Show, and she might be able to squeeze it in. We'll be back with the final few minutes that we have together and Dr. Robert Tobali as we're bringing you up to speed on the latest regarding all things COVID. Stay with me. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Yeah, I wish I just had another hour or two with you. So much to talk about every day. Love hanging out with you. I hope you're doing well. Let me very quickly, before we jump back into the phones here, thank you. If you are just tuning in, maybe getting out of work, running an errand, or saying, hey, how did you guys do? Relevant Radio not only hit its goal, we went over it by about $126,000. So I just wanted to bring you up to speed on that and say thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, when I signed off at 5, we were just under that $3 million mark. By 8 o'clock that night, heroic giving continued. And we're going to be here for a long time, continue to guide you through COVID and what's happening in the Ukraine and what's developing in the church and so many of the attacks on our religious freedoms and all the things that we do here, helping to educate you in the faith too. Tomorrow, in fact, I'll share with you a story of a priest that had to apologize because thousands of baptisms he did were invalid. Can you imagine finding out that that fundamental, you know, sacrament you get when you're a child is not valid? Whoa, I'll fill you in on that. We'll look at the sacraments and a whole lot more. That's just some of the mix that we're going to give you tomorrow. But right now I'm joined by Dr. Robert Tobali. We're taking a look at COVID. I'm going to jump right into the phones, doctor, and we'll get back to answering people's questions. Alan in Mesa, Arizona, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Tobali and Drew. This is Alan.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for calling. Go right ahead. Yeah, we hear you perfectly. Go right ahead.
Okay. Hey, I hear you saying a lot about the efficacy of the vaccine itself. I have my doubts. What I would love to hear you say, though, because this is unlike any other vaccine because it's the messenger RNA, as to whether or not this vaccine that they call a vaccine has any long-term effect and might be problematic for women who are wanting to bear children or for even anybody with autoimmune diseases. Because there are doctors out there right now that are saying that there is reason to believe that these kind of problems are going to surface into the future.
All right, good question.
That's a question I really can't answer very well. I mean, there are occasional reports of this, and then there's some concern about the spike protein concentrating in the ovaries, but you know, the spike protein is generated from a natural infection to a far higher degree than it is from a vaccination. I have lots of concerns about the vaccines myself, but I must tell you that for people who are at risk, they do protect them. And there are, unfortunately, tragic issues with the vaccines when people get them. And so I understand, I believe that people should have the choice whether or not to go ahead and get the vaccination. But, you know, as an infection doctor, when people hit the door, you know, at the hospital, it's a lot easier to take care of somebody that's been vaccinated than somebody's been unvaccinated. And, I'm not blowing smoke on that. I mean, it's night and day difference as far as the severity of the infection. So, I've had natural COVID myself. I thought I was going to die from it back in March of 2020, and I see this repeated. And, you know, this past month, it was like the best thing I could do for a lot of people was try to make sure that the priest was able to come in to give them last rites. Now, we're able to do that for a few people. The hospital wasn't allowing that previously.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like I have these medicines that have been approved, but I wonder out loud, are they helpful at all, you know? And I put people on an array of vitamins and other things when they come in addition to these other medicines that approve, like remdesivir or tocilizumab or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we try to support them. I give them aerosolized steroids, which I'm finding the aerosolized steroids in this immune response section, you know, after somebody's recovered from natural viral infection, they're like miracle drugs. You know, you talk about budesonide. We use fluticasone in this hospital. That's their preferred product. And I tell you, there's people that were on high-flow oxygen, 60 liters a minute, and barely having enough to oxygen in their veins to think. And they went home on room air. Wow. You know, I have to tell you, I mean, I pray for all my patients every day, all the patients I've cared for in the past, and but the inhaled steroid products have really been very helpful for a lot of people.
Yeah, I know another physician, doctor, who is doing the same thing. I knew somebody who had COVID and put them on that steroid, and I'll tell you what, it was a lifesaver to them. But I just want to make sure I'm clear on something that I'm hearing you say. But for a lot of people, without question, you're seeing that those who are vaccinated, their symptoms are much more mild than the unvaccinated who come into the hospital?
Tremendously so. I've had a couple of people that were vaccinated and they had underlying illness that you would think that maybe their body wouldn't respond to the vaccine, like a serious aggressive form of bloodborne cancer, you know? But for the most part, I mean, my 80-year-old, I've got an 88-year-old guy, God bless him, you know, he's vaccinated. He's, you know, he's on like a liter of oxygen. He's got other medical problems. Yeah. I've had so many 50-year-old men, and I'm just about, my tears come into my eye, 50 and 40-year-old men who didn't get vaccinated. I mean, I understand. It was their choice. The death rates were just overwhelming, and they were so tragic and leaving families behind and everything like that. So I wish there was something more I could do for people. But, you know, the most important thing is, you know, are we going to die in mortal sin?
Yeah,
and that's more important than dying or surviving from COVID. But, you know, if you have a minute, I wanted to promote something before the end of the show. So February 23rd will be the anniversary of the death of a man who's being considered for sainthood. He's on the path, Father Sam Mazzucchelli.
Love him.
And he started about 35 churches in the Northwest, Illinois, Southwest, Wisconsin, and Iowa region. And he was a companion of Bishop Baraga up in northern Michigan, I think his name was. But they were contemporaries. Well, anyway, February 23rd is the anniversary of his death. And what I go out to Benton, Wisconsin, Benton, Wisconsin, St. Patrick's, where he's buried in the back, and I go and say a rosary there. And I would invite anyone that would like to come to Benton, Wisconsin, to meet about 11 o'clock in the morning at St. Patrick's Church, and go around back to where he's buried and say a rosary and then go out to lunch afterwards. And so there's some people from Iowa and some people from Wisconsin coming this year.
When's this, Doc?
If you want to know any...
What date is that?
February 23rd. I think it's a Tuesday.
That's right around the corner. I've been there. I prayed at that tomb. So are you buying lunch? I'm kidding.
One of the other guys. But if you contact me, just go to germbusters.com and then contact and send me some information. I'll send you the information. Yeah. But germbusters.com.
And just so people understand where that is, I prayed at that very shrine, the very tomb of Father Mazzucchelli. I think he's one of these unsung saints or saints in the making right now who's interceding in a really powerful way. That if you want it on the map, very close to Dubuque, Iowa. So I don't know where you live or whether you want to fly in or drive in. It is a pretty awesome experience. Let me run back to the phones here.
Father Stan, Father Sam, when I was sick and thought I was going to die, and I taped my will up on my computer screen, and I went into my room, you know, my oxygen saturation was in the 80s, and I couldn't think, and I asked Father Sam to intercede on my behalf in St. Rocco. And that night, I mean, I woke up in the morning, and I was fine. I was a bit short-winded, but my high fevers and everything, yeah. It was a very difficult night, but it was, you know, kind of miraculous. But
I love it. Yeah, there's several undeniable medical cures for Mazzucchelli that you know, will lead to his beatification, which might be in the Diocese of Madison, Wisconsin, if that ultimately happens. So I think that's soon to come. Powerful Saint Rocco is as well. Doctor, I got to leave it there. My apologies to everybody on hold. I really wanted to get you on the air. Time just evaporated here, but Dr. Tabali will be back. Check him out, germbusters.com. I'm out of time for the day. Again, a giant thank you to you for your generosity during our Relevant Radio pledge drive. We hit a home run. We're going to be here for you for days to come, okay? For months to come. So thank you. I'll be praying for you. I know Dr. Tabali prays for you too. Until our paths again cross tomorrow, remember, God loves you, and so do I. Have a great afternoon.